So the first question is, why do we need a remembrance or a reminder or a mention of Moshe Rabbeinu's anivus, the small aleph in Vayikra, the Moshe chose to say Vayikar, like it says by Bilam, unintentional, without endearment, and the aleph reminds us of Moshe Rabbeinu's humility. What's the second thing we learn from this Vayikra el Moshe? That even though Moshe Rabbeinu was very anxious to hear the first shir on Kodshim, on Korbanos from the Rabbanu Shel Olam, but he waited outside until he was called in. And he didn't rush in without being called. And from here we learn, Kol Talmud Chacham She'in Bo Das Nevela Tova Himenu. A Talmud Chacham that doesn't have Das. And Das, in the context that it says over here, means Midos Tovos. Just like the Rambam has all of the halachas of Derech Eretz and Midos in Hilchas Deos. Deos, according to the Rambam, are Midos. So Talmud Chacham Shein Bo Das means Talmud Chacham doesn't have Midos Tovos, doesn't have Derech Eretz. He doesn't know how to hold himself back and not rush in without permission. So that's a Chisorin Midos Tovos. Is Nevela Tovei Menu. A dead carcass is better than him. So again, why over here do we need to be told the laws of Derech Eretz, right, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't rush in and he waited to be called? Why is that necessary as a preface to the laws of sacrifices? Thirdly, it says, Adam ki akriv mikem karban. Adam, the Gemara learns from this, just like Adam Harishon, didn't bring from stolen property because there was nothing to steal. Everything belonged to him. So too, you're not allowed to bring a sacrifice from stolen property. Why did that be such a roundabout thing? Adam Arisha didn't bring from Gezel because he was the only person around, and therefore you shouldn't bring. Say clearly, Adam ki akriv mikem, lacha, just like by Lulav it says, right? Lekachtem lachem, lachem and lo hagozel. Sukkah, chagas sukkah tara lacha, lacha levo hagozel. Why don't you say, as it does everywhere else, to exclude, doesn't tell me, well, Adam Arisha didn't steal because there was nothing to steal, and therefore, what's it called, don't steal either. Why the roundabout way of telling me that you can't bring a carbon from stolen property? And lastly, it says that they used to start learning with children. In some places they still do that. They used to start learning with children Chumash, not from Bereishis, but from Vayikra. Because Yovo Tahorim, the Yasku B'divrei Tahara. Let the pure children, right? Pure children come and learn the laws of purity. Now, on the surface, it's very difficult because there are two storim in Mishnayos, Kodshim and Taharos. Kodshim deals with Korbanos, and Taharos deals with Tuma and Tahara, right? So, Vayikra, up until Shmini, till the end of Shmini, doesn't deal with Tahara. It deals with Kodshim, with Korbanos. So, why does it say Yovel Tahorim? The Yasku B'divrei Tahara, when Vayikra is more Korbanos, Kodshim, not Taharos. So it should say Yavo Kedoshim, the Yasku B'divrei Kedusha. The beginning of Vayikra has to do with Kedusha, not with Tahara. So why is it Yavo Tahorim? What does that mean? And why are children Tahorim? A child can be Makabel Tumah. From the day he's born, he could be Makabel Tumah, so he could be Tameh. What is the concept that he's Tahar? Tahorim. What does that mean? To answer all of this, I'm going to start with the second to the last question first, and we'll work our way backwards. We normally think that Midos Tovos, Derech Eretz, Mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro are basically meant to protect society from injustices, and therefore you have to act properly in order that you don't hurt other people. Because if people hurt each other, they can't be a functioning society. So all the laws of Derech Eretz, of good character traits, of functioning well between man and man, is that there should be a functioning society. Because if not, then society can't function and people get hurt, and that's not fair. If that is the case, then that leads to the following distorted philosophy. That if you don't hurt anybody, then there's no reason why you can't do anything in the privacy of your own house with consenting adults. As long as nobody's getting hurt and everybody agrees, then you can act like an animal in your house, and there's nothing wrong with that, because acting like an animal is only bad if it affects other people and it hurts other people. And that is not Torah philosophy, for two reasons. First reason is that this concept that I can do something in the privacy of my house and everybody agrees and therefore nobody's getting hurt and that's therefore it's okay is a fallacy, because there is nothing that doesn't affect other people. Okay, just today we understand that in so far as pollution. You can do something in the privacy of your own bedroom and through it pollute the world and affect many, many people. Example, fluorocarbons, right? People believe that the fluorocarbons break up the ozone layer of the atmosphere and permit radiation to come in and rain down on the earth. Let's take it to an intense, absurd level. But for the sake of the marshal, it's good. Imagine if spritzing fluorocarbons into the atmosphere would immediately open up a window somewhere in the world of the ozone layer, right? And dangerous radiation would rain down on that area and cause 10,000 people to get cancer on the spot, okay? Could somebody claim, look, I'm going to the privacy of my bedroom and spritzing my underarms with this fluorocarbon-propelled deodorant, and it's nobody's business, I'm not affecting anybody else, my private business, don't tell me what to do. If it would be that when he spritzed those fluorocarbons, they would go into the atmosphere, open a window over China, and 10,000 Chinese would get cancer, right, within 24 hours, okay, nobody could claim that they are only affecting themselves. Obviously, what you're doing in the privacy of your bedroom pollutes the atmosphere and causes tremendous havoc. Therefore, we believe that every time a person does a sin, it pollutes spiritually the environment, and it causes the world to be less secure, less safe, brings very, very negative powers, unleashes negative powers in the world. So no one can say, well, I'm doing a sin that doesn't affect anybody else and it's all consenting adults in the privacy of my home and nobody's being affected. It's not true. You're polluting the environment spiritually, and who knows what kind of havoc you're causing on people, on the world, or whatever. So that argument, for one reason, doesn't hold water. But there's another reason, too. And that is, it's not merely because it affects other people that you can't act in a way that's not proper. But God expects every person to be a human being, to act like a human being. And every human being has a responsibility not to act like an animal. And therefore, the Rabban Shem gave us rules of conduct that apply to human beings and make us different than the animal. And therefore, even if you do it in the privacy of your own home and nobody sees and everybody involved is consenting, you're not allowed to act like an animal. You have to act like a human being. And if these things are animal conduct, then it's not proper. No matter who, no, even if no one would be affected. But the Rabban Shem expects you to be, he created you, B'Tselem Elokim, he created you in his image. He expects you to act in a godly way, at least in a human way, not in an animalistic way. And if there's something wrong with it, even if it doesn't affect anyone else. Midos tovos, derech eretz, are not only because how it affects other people, not only because it prevents a functioning society. It's because you as an individual have to act like a mensch. You have to be godlike, not animal-like. And therefore, it behooves you to behave in a certain way, even if no one is affected and nobody knows. So that is another reason. The Mela, Torah says like this, as a preface to bringing sacrifices, right? What right does a person have to bring an animal and use the animal as a means for his service for God? You can't do that with another human being. Right? You can't use another human being as a tool to your service of God. Right? You don't sacrifice people. Why animals? Because animals were created to serve man. man is a servant of God, and the animals were given to him to use in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. So that's only as long as a human being acts like a human being. Then he has a right to use animals. But if a human being acts like an animal, he has no right to use other animals. Adam ki akrim mikem. If you're an Adam, then the world was created for the sake of Adam, then you have a right to make use of animals in your service of God. But if you're not an Adam, then you don't have rights to use animals in service of God. And therefore, the way we learn not to bring from stealing is not because it affects other people. Not because it has to be yours and not somebody else's. Don't steal. That would just tell me that the idea of stealing is because it affects other people, hurts other people. But Adam, even if it was possible that there could be something that was called stolen, not his, but there's nobody else to be hurt by Adam. He was the only person around. No one else could have been affected, but there could have been something that was not designated as his, and therefore he wasn't allowed to bring it. It still would have been awesome. Why? Because it's not stealing is not prohibited only because how it affects other people. Even if it would affect nobody, like by Adam Arishon, there's nobody else. But something could have been called stolen. A human being doesn't steal. And if you steal, you don't deserve the title Adam. And if you're not Adam, then you can't bring a behemoth as a carbon. One behemoth can't bring another behemoth. You can only bring a behemoth as a carbon if you're an Adam. That's the idea. Memela, as a preface to the bringing of carbonos, you have to be a mensch. And therefore the Torah tells us what is the foundation of all midos tovos, is anivus, humility. If a person's not humble, if he's a balgaiva, he's not going to have any midos tovos. All the midos stem from a person being humble enough to want to function properly and to accept God's cue of what it means to function properly. But if you're not an anav, then you're not going to be able to have any of the midos tovos. So therefore, Vayikra starts with an understanding of the anivus of Moshe Rabbeinu, because that is the foundation of being able to bring korbanos. You have to have midos tovos. And therefore, the first few psukim speak about das, deos. Talmud Chacham she'ein bo das, a Talmud Chacham who doesn't have derech eretz. He doesn't know his place. He rushes in. He doesn't know how to act properly. So a nevela is better than him. A dead animal is better than him. Not only a live animal. But because you would think, okay, he's no worse than a live animal. No, he's worse than a dead animal. A dead animal is still an animal and has a function. But a Talmud Chacham, whose Torah isn't in the context of midos tovos, is worse than an animal. He's not a human being, and he's worse than an animal because there's no purpose to him. His Torah is destructive because it's not an environment of midos tovos. So better he shouldn't have it. So even a nevela, at least a nevela is a dead animal. There's a purpose for a dead animal too. But a person who's not a human being doesn't become an animal. He becomes worse than an animal. His Torah makes him worse, more destructive than the worst animal. So a person doesn't have das, a nevela tove menu. And das is tahara. It says, the pasuk says, v'hoya emunas itecha chosen yeshuos chochmos v'das. So six siddurim of the Mishnah are hinted to in that pasuk. What are they? So the first one is emuna, is rayim, because you need a lot of emuna to plant the seed and know that it's going to grow. You can't control it. You have to believe in God. Itecha, your times is moed, right? Is what's it called? Seder moed. It has to do with the times. Chosen is seder nashim. The strength of a person is his wife, family, whatever. Yeshuos is nezikin, because learning nezikin, not damaging people, saves the world from danger and from anarchy. Chochmas is kachim. Wisdom is kachim. Kachim is tremendous amount of wisdom in karbonos or whatever. And das is taharos. So das goes together with tahara. Tahara means you have pure motives in what you do. It comes from good character. Purity means character, good character. And therefore, a Talmud Chacham, Shein Bodas, doesn't mean he doesn't have good character. So Nevela Tova Imenu. And since Das is connected to Hara, Tahara means pure motives and good character and not doing things that are opposite. What makes a person a human being is Das. He has intelligence. Intelligence means he can act like a human being. If he doesn't act like a human being, he doesn't have Das. Children don't have bad midos. They just don't have any midos, right? They're, especially little children haven't yet picked up bad character. They're pure insofar that their characters are okay. Right? They're still pure of character. So Yovel Tahorin, the Yasuk, the Divrei Tahara is not talking about Vayikra, F, the Inyan of Kabbalah. Some of the first few psukim. The first few psukim of Vayikra are a preface to Karbanos. What's the preface to Karbanos? Have midos tovos. And that's Tahara. So let little children who haven't yet gotten bad character traits, their Tahorim, and Yasok B'divrei Tahara, not the whole Sefer of Vayikra, not even the whole Parsha, the first few psukim. Start with that, because that's the foundation of the whole Torah. The foundation of the whole Torah is to put it in an environment, a context where you're a mensch. But if you're not a mensch, you can't have Torah. Torah wasn't given to dogs. It was given to human beings. First you have to be a human being. After a human being, then in that context you can have Torah. So, therefore, if you want to start educating a child in Torah, start with Derech Eretz. Start with Midos Tovos. That's at the beginning of Vayikra. Because if you're not a mensch, you can't bring a korban. If you act like a behemah, then you have no right to manipulate another behemah. Only if you're an Adam, then you have a right to manipulate behemoths. Okay. Which brings us to the next point. And that is, there are enlightened people in this world that look with great disdain on korbanos, sacrifices, taking animals and slaughtering them and burning their body parts. Seems very primitive, very cruel. Surely not in keeping with animals' rights and a refined, progressive look of the world. Right? This is all for the Dark Ages, you know, for primitive people, but it's not for enlightened, intellectual people. And so I understand, possibly, that somebody who is a philosophical, ideological vegetarian, who doesn't feel that he can use animals for anything, could have a legitimate, well, see, it's not legitimate, but at least from his standpoint, a legitimate claim that how can you use animals, you know, to serve God? But somebody who eats steak and enjoys a nice barbecue, who wears leather shoes, right, and perhaps buys his wife a mink coat, right, a little absurd for a person like that to have tainas on korbanos. Meaning, well, I can slaughter animals, burn their body parts, use them for my shoes, my steak, but to use them for God? Nah, that's primitive. That's absurd, right? Maybe using them for spiritual reasons, whatever those spiritual reasons are a lot more, reasonable than using them for your own stomach, right? If you can take an animal, slaughter it, cut it up, and burn its meat on a barbecue so you can eat it, right? Why can't you burn it on a barbecue so you can serve God spiritually with it? Why is spiritual needs less important than filling your stomach? So somebody who is not an ideological vegetarian has no claim against sacrifices, right? It is not any more primitive to burn an animal for the sake of God or to burn it for the sake of your stomach. So that's absurd. Oh, how about people who are ideological vegetarians and they feel that it's wrong for human beings to manipulate animals? Animals have rights too, and animals have a right to live, and who are you to go and slaughter an animal and whatever? So somebody who's an ideological vegetarian is an apikoros. That is apikorosis. It's against the Torah. You could be a vegetarian, we'll see in one second, in what way, but not ideologically. Because the Torah says that the world was created, including animals, for man's sake. And they were created for the sake of man. Man has a right to use them, to use them for his purposes. He also has a right to eat them. The Torah says b'feirush, right? It should be to you for food. Noah, in the time of Noah, meat was permitted to be eaten. Animals are allowed to be killed for the meat. Torah gives a mitzvah of shechita, tells you how to shech. So you can't be frumer than God. Right? God created all these things, and he said that human beings are allowed to kill animals and eat them, and use them for whatever, for clothing, for whatever. Okay? So somebody who comes along and says that he's wrong to do that is basically disagreeing with God. Most of the time, people like that don't believe in God altogether, don't believe that God created the world, and therefore God has no right to tell me anything because he's not around. Right? And therefore, since the world just came by evolution, by accident, and we're all basically in the same category, right? We're all a bunch of accidents, so we're just a more intelligent animal than the other animals, and what does one animal have a right to manipulate other animals? This mistake is not new. The Sefer HaIkarim, who lived, I think, in around the 1200s, something like that, 1100s, 1200s, he says the following. He says, why did God permit Noah to eat meat after the flood? What was the purpose? They didn't eat meat before the flood, according to many opinions. Why afterwards? He says like this. He says, one of the reasons why people reach the levels of depravity that they did before the flood is because they equated human beings and animals. And they didn't feel that human beings could manipulate animals, use animals, or whatever, that animals and human beings are on the same level. We're all basically animals. We're just more intelligent animals. That doesn't give us a right to manipulate the animal kingdom. And therefore, what happened was, he says, not that they elevated the animal to a human level, but they made man descend to the animal. Everybody's equal. We're all a bunch of animals. And the Mela, they felt that just like animals can act like animals, human beings can act like animals. That's what they did. And that's why the human beings ended up being destroyed. So after the Mabul, the Rabbon Shem wanted us to remember we're not animals. And because we're not animals, we have to act like human beings. And therefore, he permitted us to eat animals, so you'll know you're not an animal. Because animals were created to serve you. Obviously, you're a different sug. You're a different type. It's not just a more intelligent animal. You're completely different. And animals were created to serve man. Today, that is a common philosophy. I remember years ago, I heard a radio program that discussed a study that was made, a scientific study that was made on horses. And they found that a certain percentage of horses are homosexual. Conclusion, since in nature a certain number of horses are homosexual, then by human beings also a certain percentage of human beings are also homosexual. And therefore, it's natural. It's just an alternative lifestyle, just like by horses. Mm-hmm. I had to stop my car because it was absurd. I could have saved them a lot of money. Look, you can study, why study animals? There are animals that eat other animals of the same kind. They're cannibals, okay? So a certain percentage of animals are cannibals. Therefore, cannibalism is merely an alternative lifestyle. Some people eat this, some people eat other people, right? It's okay because animals do it. I'll give you another thing. You know, animals steal from each other, right? They take things. Squirrels, I think, take in what's called nuts, one squirrel from the other. So there's a certain percentage of squirrels that are thieves. So being a thief is just an alternative lifestyle, right? So we can have thieves as one alternative lifestyle, cannibals is another one, homosexuals another one, and I'm not to say that it may be true that by nature, right, there are animals that steal and animals that are cannibals and animals that are homosexual, and maybe even by human beings. There are people who have a desire to steal and people who have a desire even to be cannibals and people who have desire for same-sex relations. That doesn't make it okay. That means that as human beings, we are not animals. And we don't just do what comes naturally, but we're supposed to overcome natural desires and channel them in the right way, repress them when they're the wrong way, and use them in the right way if they can be used in the right way. Do you know, I'll tell you a secret, right? A lot of people are born with heterosexual tithes, okay? Forget about homosexual tithes, heterosexual. and they have to repress them when they can't be used properly. And sometimes even a person may be prohibited to marry anybody, and he has to repress it completely because he can't use it in a permissible way. He can't use it. That's a human being. It's true. We may be similar to animals in the desires that we have, even desires for prohibited things. A lot of people have desires. Probably all of us do, right, for desires for prohibited things. But we're human beings. We're not supposed to do what comes naturally. We're supposed to control it. That's what a human being is. So what difference does it make if there are a certain percentage of horses that are homosexual and therefore a certain percentage of human beings? So what? There's a certain percentage of human beings that are heterosexual and have tremendous taivas, even stronger than that, and are supposed to control them. So people control them also. But that is why we're allowed to eat meat, says Sefer Yikarim, that we shouldn't make this mistake. We shouldn't equate animals with people. We're people and the animals are animals. And animals, okay for them to act like an animal. Not okay for a human being to act like an animal. And therefore, the opposition to using animals, because we're all in the same category, we're all a bunch of animals, and one animal shouldn't manipulate another animal, is completely connected to Torah. So the person, on the other hand, says, look, I don't think it's so healthy to eat meat. And I think I'm not on the level to raise the meat, you know, to the human level. I may be dragged down to the animal level by eating meat, which is what the Torah says, that Am HaAretz shouldn't eat meat. Only a Talmud Chacham should eat meat, because he can elevate the meat and not be pulled down by it. And you shouldn't eat meat to be filled with it, just minimal amount of meat or whatever, not like bread, which you can eat to be full. So there are sources in Chazal that eating meat may not be the ideal kind of thing. So if a person says, look, health-wise, I don't like to eat meat, not ideologically, they can be a vegetarian. Nothing wrong with being a health-oriented vegetarian. But being an ideological-oriented vegetarian is apikoursis. It's against the Torah. And therefore, to have a complaint, how you can use animals, right? So again, if you eat meat, then the complaint doesn't start. If you don't eat meat, that philosophy is a mistaken philosophy. Okay, in any case. So, how do we look at sacrifices then? Now, they say in the name of Rav Kook, he's quoted that there will not be animal sacrifices in the future, only meal offerings. But animal sacrifices not, because the world will be on a much higher level, and we've, you know, outgrown using animals or whatever. So the people who find animal sacrifice to be not within their world view, right, found somebody that they can, you know, use to say that, well, you see, even Rav Kook said that there won't be animal sacrifice in the future. That is absurd. Rav Kook never said that. Rav Kook was a frum Jew who davened every day, and on Shabbos, and on Yontif, and he said in his Musaf the same thing we say. V'sham na'as elefanecha korbanos chavoseinu. And there, in the third Beis HaMikdash, we ask that the third Beis HaMikdash we built, it's when Mashiach comes, and we will bring the sacrifices, including animal sacrifices. So the whole Siddur, right, says that there will be animal sacrifices in the future. In addition to that, forget about the Siddur. The Navi, Navi Yechezko, has a detailed description of the sacrifices that will be brought in the third Beis HaMikdash. That means to say that there won't be animal sacrifices in the future is to deny the validity of one sefer, at least, in Tanakh. So, Rav Kook couldn't have said that, so he didn't say it. If you look what he says, he doesn't say anything near that. What Rav Kook is going on is a pasuk. It's in the place, the source of what he says, what they quote him, that there won't be animal sacrifices in the future, is the following. The pasuk says, we say at the end of davening, at the end of Shemone Esrei, the Orva Lashen Minchas Yehuda Virushalayim Kimei Olam Uchshanim Kamanios. And the meal offering, okay, the Orva Lashem, it will be pleasant to God. Minchas Yehuda Yerushalayim, the meal offerings of Yehuda and Yerushalayim, just as it was in days of yore. So Rav Kook says the following. He says that in this world, the way the world is now, human beings have an intelligence and they have a feeling of God's presence. And they are responsible to bring the whole world, the rest of the strata of the world, up and elevate to a recognition of God. How so? By eating animals, we raise them to a human level. And then they become part of us and we have a recognition of God. Or by sacrificing animals to God, we take the animal and elevate it to a higher level and connect it to God. But in the future, when Mashiach comes, then even the animal world, the world will be filled. The world will be filled with a knowledge of God, like, like the ocean, the water fills the ocean. So even animals will be on a level where they'll have a certain intelligence and a feeling of the presence of God. They won't need to be elevated through sacrifices. Okay? So now, so the people who don't know what he said, because there's more to it, say, well, you see, there won't be animal sacrifice. It won't be necessary. Only meal offerings will be necessary to raise the vegetable kingdom up to God. But the animal kingdom will have its own thing. He doesn't say that. He says the following. He says, the reason for bringing a meal offering will be the same as it was in olden times to elevate the vegetable world towards God. But the reason for bringing animal sacrifices will not be as it used to be. It'll have a different idea. But it won't be like the old reason to elevate the animal to an awareness of God or a connection to God, because that won't be necessary. But he doesn't say that, therefore, there won't be any animal sacrifices. There will be animal sacrifice, but it won't be, kishonim kadmonios. It'll be va'arvel Hashem, the bringing of meal offerings, will be pleasant to God as it used to be in the past, because it'll have the same reason. But the animal sacrifices won't have the same reason they had in the past. They'll have different ideas to them. And therefore, they won't be like in the past. They'll be something different than in the past. But that they won't not be, doesn't say. It doesn't say there won't be animal sacrifice. Just say they won't fulfill the same purpose they filled in the past. That's all he says. So according to everybody, there will be animal sacrifices. And for lack of time, and next week is Titus Esther, so there won't be a shear. But maybe as we go through the Parshios of Vayikra, maybe in Achrimos or whatever, it speaks more about sacrifices, or maybe as we get closer to Pesach and speak about Korban Pesach, we'll see that there are many different purposes for sacrifices. One of them, what we just said now, to elevate the rest of the world higher towards God through human beings, but there are many other ideas in sacrifices, and then Yitzhak Hashem will find the opportunity through Sefer Vayikra to mention at least some of them to give an idea of what the deeper understanding, even for intelligent and refined people, how sacrifices can be understood in a way that will satisfy the intellect of people on such a high level like we are. Okay.